Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Shonky Lab. I'm Elton, and joining me is a man who I have my hands on his waist. I'm slowly riding my hands up, stretching out his arms. It's Andy.
Are you the king of the world?
Can you feel the breeze in your hair?
You see, I would have gone with, you know, we're kind of huddling up here on this single piece of furniture, which is clearly large enough for us both to be sat upon out here in the frigid cold Atlantic, because unlike other individuals, I wouldn't force you to wait in the freezing cold water, hoping that you would die.
Or we could have started with, it's been 84 years.
Well, it's been a bit longer than that now.
Yeah, it has, yeah.
Oh, that's depressing, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is.
People 112 years.
Well, people will start saying, we are now closer to it. I can't get this sentence right. You know when they do it about like the Jurassic Park and Stegosaurus and Tyrannosaurus Rex?
We're closer to the Tyrannosaurus is closer to the iPhone than it is to the Stegosaurus.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that malarkey.
Yes.
There's something along with 84 years and like it's not working in my head. Anyway, yes, we're here to talk about a boat, isn't it?
Wait, Elton, you could almost say that this intro has hit an iceberg.
Like many of my episodes do, yes. Thank you, mate.
It's a recurring theme here. We should probably post better lookouts.
All the lookouts we have like dogs and white canes.
Oh, I'm beginning to sense a problem here.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
Anyway, we are going to talk about Titanic in a minute, aren't we? Yes.
The Titanic, yes.
The Titanic,
Not just the film by James Cameron.
Oh, God, no. Although, no, hang on. Let's get into other things first. First off...
Do we have matters arising, do we? Parish notices?
Yeah. I wanted to say thank you. Thank you for that derelict episode where you had all this soundtrack songs sent in to you.
Oh, well, thank you for contributing to that.
I needed that, and that was really good, listening to everyone and introducing their little songs, and I was sat there going, oh, should have done something like this. I hate you for this, but no, it's brilliant. So
I give you my permission to steal the idea of Desert Island Discs, which I totally came up with completely organically on my own. I grant you my boon that you may do a shonky version of that if you wish.
No, I won't be doing that. No.
I just want 10%, okay?
Of course, yes. But no, it was good. And you got me thinking about songs for like the sci-fi. And as soon as you sent me that message through about it, my brain went... I had nothing in my head. I didn't have any songs in my head whatsoever. I couldn't think of anything. So I had to go to YouTube and my soundtrack collection, which I've slowly built up over the years now. Started with Top Gun many, many moons ago. But the actual soundtracks like Sunshine and Alien. And Alien's a different one because... I wanted the main song, but that's not actually the main song in the film, is it? It's a totally different one. So I was like, oh, I can't do that. And I had so many that were running through my head. So thank you for getting me to actually get off my ass and do something, because I needed to do something like that. So, and it was a nice little thought exercise for me as well. So on behalf of everyone that listened to that, thank you, mate. And do it again very soon.
You're more than welcome. Anyone who would like, well, firstly, if you haven't listened to it, please go and listen to it because, and I'm not saying this just to promote the episode. It's really, there's nothing more lovely than having people who are really passionate share that passion with you. Mm-hmm. And people will never get more passionate than when they're trying to tell you to listen to a piece of music that they really love and why it means something to them. And I think we got nine people contributed, including Nelson.
Yeah.
And many people who've been on the Shonky Lab. And they all recommended a piece of music from science fiction or more science fiction related because, you know, I have a brand. I have to stick to that.
Yeah.
And it was great. And I will do it again. It'll probably be towards the end of April, beginning of May time because I can't just do one straight again. You know, I have to fly under the copyright gods so they don't strike me down.
Of course, yeah. But if anyone can't do it too many times either.
Yeah, that's the thing. And also that's not what The Derelict is about. You know, but at the time, I felt we all needed just a little interlude. So that's what I did that. But if people want to contribute to that, then you can just find me on Twitter or on the Facebook group or anything. And pressure Elton to do a Shonky Lab version because he should totally do one.
See, I've toyed with the idea of doing a local radio episode of people phoning in and an actual radio episode as well with music, but I cut the music out. So you have the start of the track and the end of the track, but the middle of the track is not there because then it sounds like it's a radio broadcast cut. I've got lots of ideas in my head of playing around with that sort of stuff. And I think I've got them on our little docket that we have of ideas. They've been on there for quite a while, but I haven't got around to doing it. But I've got other little fires irons in the fires. That's the one. Yes. Fires in irons. I've got ideas. Look, there's a lot going on in the world, and I'm trying to wrap my head around it, and I'm still trying to learn how to podcast. So excuse the poor shoddiness of this, but we shall continue anyway. So yes, please, everyone, head over to The Great Derelict, download that to your heart's content. That would be great. But let's get back on topic on what we are going to be talking about. And you said in the build-up to this, in the green room, that this was one of your earliest passions. Is that right?
Yeah, this is one of my oldest. Basically, with me, you know, I'm born. There's that whole period before you're really a person at all, where, you know, just eat, sleep and shit. Mm-hmm. And then there was science fiction, and then there was Titanic. That was it. Oh, wait, no, I think there was also Thomas the Tank Engine in there somewhere. But that was probably around the same time as Titanic. So Star Trek, Titanic, Thomas the Tank Engine. That's my, like, under five experience.
Right. So this is before you fell down and broke your arm type thing.
Oh, yeah. This is the most halcyon days before I broke any bones. That all came later.
Wow. So it's right real early doors then.
Well, yeah. To give you a bit of background, as people often say, so you must have really liked, really been moved by the James Cameron film. And I like to put on my hipster sunglasses and go, ha, please. I was into the Titanic before it was uncool to be into the Titanic.
Yeah.
You know, I was obsessed with that thing since the mid-80s.
Okay. And was there a spark that ignited that? Or was it just there's a boat down at the bottom of the sea. That sounds interesting. I must learn more.
So what this, because like any five-year-old, obviously I was just interested in early 20th century ocean liners.
Of course.
We all went through that phase.
We did, yes, I remember. Yeah. I still have a scale model of the Bismarck.
That wasn't a... ocean liner. Oh, actually, there was a Bismarck ocean liner. I'll allow it.
Yeah, in your face, man. In your face. No, I didn't know that. But
it's complicated. It wasn't actually called the Bismarck for long because it was ended up being given to the Allies after World War One. But that's a different story for a different day. No, what it was, my father was into the Titanic, or rather, he had a National Geographic subscription. And
oh, okay, yeah.
This is back in the day, in the old day, where National Geographic existed as a magazine, not a channel on Sky or a thing on Disney Plus. No, it was a magazine. It was a little bit bigger than A5 with a big yellow border all around it.
Yes, I remember seeing them in dentist waiting rooms and
So my dad was subscribed to that, so he would get those and. I remember vividly they found the wreck of the Titanic in 1985 and in 1986, and everything happened in 1986, people, you know. 1986, Chernobyl, Challenger, they visited the Titanic. So for a five-year-old boy, as I was in 1986, everything happened that year.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, my dad had the magazine and, you know, he was really into it. And so I was really into it. And they they went to visit Vivek in a little submarine, a little submersible called Alvin, and they went all the way down. And then they released a documentary on that on VHS cassette. And I vividly remember the VHS cassette. It had the cover was like the cover for the magazine. It had a yellow border on a green background. And I watched the shit out of that VHS to the point where it's kind of one of my earliest memories, the evocative memories. When I was talking about doing this, I decided to see if I could find it on YouTube, just to watch it.
Oh, okay. And
I couldn't find the documentary, but I found the soundtrack. And this isn't like some orchestral, sweeping, fantastic thing. This is made for TV in the mid-80s soundtrack.
Okay, so this is like sent out to someone and into a garage and said, right, do this for us for 15 quid.
I can't objectively tell you that, though, because it resonates with me so deeply that when I hear these bits of music, these cues, I'm just transported back to watching that documentary. It was narrated by Martin Sheen? Yeah, the one who was the president on The West Wing, that one. Not the cokehead, his dad.
Yes.
And I mean, for all I know, Martin Sheen, you know, he did some stuff, especially during Apocalypse Now, but we're not here to judge on that. But I remember him narrating that, and I watched that document. It was the kind of VHS where I would watch it, I would get to the end of it, I would rewind it, and I would watch it again. I was obsessed with that video, and I was obsessed with the Titanic. I can't really tell you why, I just was. And it's a weird thing for like someone under 10 to be obsessed with, like I was. But I remember my uncle, he got me plans of the Titanic, like a side drawing he got for me, and which was amazing, I thought.
Oh, nice. An engineer's plans?
Yeah, engineer line drawing of it.
Oh,
it was
huge.
We had books, anything to do with Titanic whatsoever. It became like a precious thing that I had to possess. I had to seek it out and have it. My dad had on top of his wardrobe a model kit, which he never built. And to this day, it remains unbuilt. But he had a model kit of a Titanic. And I was always like, when are you going to build that one? When are you going to build the Titanic? When are you going to make the Titanic?
Mm.
And it never happened. But I would seek out other documentaries or videos. And you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, there wasn't a huge amount accessible, and there was no internet, so I couldn't go seeking things, and that was kind of all I had to sustain me until I discovered A Night to Remember, which is a flipping amazing film from the 1950s, a proper British film, black and white. About the sinking of a Titanic, don't you know? They all speak like this. Terribly British, terribly proper.
Beautiful.
And yeah, that's in a nutshell is kind of where it started, to an extent. It is fascinating, though, even divorced from the nostalgia, the whole story of the Titanic from its inception, its construction, its sinking, its discovery, the whole thing fascinates me.
Mm. And there are conspiracy theories as well, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, I knew you'd kind of gravitate towards those.
Have to, come on, you know me.
You are contractually obliged to point out any conspiracy theory as and when you see it. Well, I'll tell you, we can get to some of those in a bit if you want. But,
yeah, okay.
I mean, I don't really think you want me to just be a talking Wikipedia page, because Wikipedia exists for that, and there are fantastic documentaries, including one by National Geographic, which are far better to do than that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll throw it to you. What would you like to know? Is there anything particularly you would like to know? Do you have questions?
It's the fascination, first off, and I get it, because it, as a young child, it's that open-minded wonderness that you have of space. I think my thing was either dinosaurs or space.
Hmm.
And you can sometimes, I know I've said this before, when I catch myself driving and I'm actually going, oh, I'm driving, and then I get a bit worried, or I'm standing there going, I can see. I can actually see these are my hands in front of me. And you have like an out of body experience of, I can actually do this. And when I get thinking like that, And I used to do it a lot when I was younger about space, and there are actual planets out there that are actually there. And dinosaurs actually walked the earth. They're just not here anymore. So if I put myself into your shoes in that kind of experience, was it, did you have one of them moments with Titanic of, it's still down there. It's actually there. If I went there, went deep enough, I can actually touch it.
Oh, very much so. It's funny you should mention that particular thing. People may know that there was once a TV show headed by an individual whose name we do not speak. I'll just say Jingle Jangle Jewelry. And you could write to him and he might be able to fix things for you, shall we say.
Yep.
And I was once very tempted to write in to say I wanted to go and see the Titanic until I put two and two together and realized it would involve spending several hours in a teeny tiny submarine. And I don't know if you're aware of this or the listeners are aware of this, but I'm claustrophobic.
Okay.
This would not be good.
No, because it is hours getting down there, isn't it? And it's a slow descent, isn't it?
Yeah, it's over 2 hours to descend to where the Titanic is, because when they descend, it's unpowered. Basically, the submersible is hoisted off the back of the ship. And it has weights on it. And when they cut the rope holding it onto the ship, it just drifts down to the bottom. And when they want to come back up, they have to cut the weights away and then it floats up to the top.
That's terrifying.
Yes.
And James Cameron has done this a couple of times, hasn't he?
So James Cameron, much like myself, has a bit of an obsession with the Titanic and things under the water. But it was discovered by... So it's a bit contentious here. It was discovered by a American and French team, but everyone always gives the credit solely to the American part of that, which was Dr. Robert Ballard.
Right. And hoorah, America.
Hoorah, God bless America. But here's something people may not realize. When he was looking for the Titanic, he wasn't actually looking for the Titanic. It was a cover, because he was paid by the US Navy to actually go and look for a couple of US nuclear submarines which had sunk in the 60s. And they wanted to know what was the state of the submarines. But A, they didn't want the Russians or the Soviets to know where the submarines were. And they didn't want the Soviets to know that they had the ability to find the submarines either. So they said, he's going to go off and find the Titanic. And they told him, when you find the submarines, if you want to go and have a look, sure, fine, what have you. But you are there to find the submarines. And he found both of the submarines. And then he went and he found the Titanic.
Really? What? In the same sort of adventure?
Yep.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So,
and that was top secret. They only unveiled the truth of the discovery, I think something like 5 or 10 years ago.
Right.
Because it was top secret.
So why, it was quite hard to find Titanic, wasn't it?
Yes, because as people know, the ship was big, but the ocean is bigger.
Mm-hmm. It's and huge.
It was huge. And I believe it or not, when the ship was sinking, most people seemed to have more to do than to properly log exactly where they were at the time. So the records of where it was when it sank were a little bit off, you know. Back in the early 20th century, navigation wasn't all GPS and everything. It was all still dead reckoning and using star charts. So they were a bit off. But the way he found it, we're kind of doing this backwards because we're talking about the discovery before we talk about the rest of the stuff. But that's fine. That's fine. But most people, when they go, well, at the time, when they went looking for the ship, would just look for the ship. Makes sense, doesn't it? You know, it's a big thing. Just look for that. But what Ballard understood was, don't look for the ship. Look for the debris field, because as the ship sank, tons of stuff falls off of a ship. You know, things fall at different rates and they're blown away by the currents. And the debris field would be far, far larger than the ship itself.
Yeah.
So he looked, and this was the case with the submarines as well. He looked for the debris field first, found the debris field, and then followed it back until he found the point of origin. And he did the same with the Titanic.
Right. Okay. It's a clever way of doing it, isn't it?
It's clever, very clever, yes. And that's now what just about every oceanographer, when in a wreck hunting, they do now. They don't necessarily look just for the ship. They look for the debris fields, or they'd use the sonar and the side scanning, a lot of the techniques and technologies that he kind of pioneered and refined are what are used now. When they were looking for the MH370, the aircraft which disappeared in the Indian Ocean, mm-hmm. it's those techniques they're still using, but obviously a plane is much teenier, tinier thing.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Did you do an episode on MH370? I can't remember if you did or not.
No, we haven't, no.
Okay. No. But in there, the reason they suspect they don't have the debris field is they don't think it impacted at speed, causing debris to scatter. They think it landed quite gently and so was much more whole as it
and
sank.
And then sank.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Oh, quite a morbid episode already, isn't it?
Well, we are talking about an event where some 1,500 people drowned. So, yeah, it's going to get a bit maudlin.
Yeah. So, what aspects of this thing interest you? I know everything about it is going to be interesting, but are there any things that really pique your interest with, like, either the construction of it or where it was constructed or the actual journey itself or the myths behind it?
Well, as you say, it is everything, and I suppose it was actually quite fitting that we started talking more about the discovery because that's when I really initially got interested in it. Mm. But I mean, firstly, it is a handsome ship. Just for me, I find it aesthetically pleasing to look at.
Yeah,
it's well balanced. It has graceful lines. I like. It's got four funnels, and it just seems much more right to have four funnels than two or three. I don't know why. It just does.
It's the even thing, isn't it?
I think it is. But also, I suspect there's a certain amount of, because the Titanic and its sister ships have kind of been imprinted on me about what the idealized version of an ocean liner is. Mm-hmm. I judge all other ocean liners against Titanic. So there was a certain amount of that. But yeah, I find it's I mean, firstly, you know, this was built in 1912. So this is before the First World War. And they are building, you know, if you go back just 12 years to the turn of a century, only really getting ironclad or steel ocean liners maybe in the previous 20, 30 years.
Right, okay.
And this
so this was like new technology then?
This was the equivalent of something like the Saturn V at the time.
This is like cutting edge then.
Well, they were saying things like when people went on the ship, and you know, you hear about third class were in like absolute squalid conditions. But for many people, it was the first time they would have been in a place which had indoor plumbing at all and electric lights.
Oh, okay.
Like so much of a population across Europe, you know, throughout Ireland, you know, in the more depressed areas, the people who were emigrating into the US because, you know, there was the big drive for emigration, you know, bring me your poor, your tireless, whatever it says on the side of the Statue of Liberty, mm-hmm. Until they scratch that out. It was encouraging people to travel across. And these people were living effectively the same way they'd been living for the previous 300 odd years.
Yeah.
So it would be like us, I suppose, if Elon got his spaceships, kind of his starship sorted and suddenly just rocked up to get on one of those. It's just mind-blowing that this thing exists all of a sudden.
Yeah, and we would go on board and look at the technology and be like, wow, we actually live here now for the next couple of days or a couple of months or whatever mm-hmm. it is. And we actually get to use this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually went over to Belfast right before the 2020 happened.
Okay.
Not wanting to use that particular C word right now. And you can go there. They have a museum, the Titanic Museum there. And the slipways where they built the ship still exist. I mean, the gantries and everything are all gone now.
Yeah.
But the slipways are still there. And there's like the outline of the ship, which you can walk around. And there's just these little echoes of the ship and its construction are still there. And it was really fascinating for me to be able to go and actually have that connection. In fact, we even stayed in the hotel. And the hotel used to be the drawing offices for Harland and Wolff, the company which built it.
Really?
Which is now a hotel.
Okay. And did you have like, was it eerie walking around that sort of the actual place where it was built?
No,
did you get, a sense of eeriness? But I suppose it's not a spooky story, though, is it?
Well, it's not a spooky story. And also, there, they don't really talk too much about the sinking. In fact, there's a saying in Ireland, in Northern Ireland, in Belfast, when talking about the Titanic, they say, well, it was fine when it left here. You know, they celebrate the engineering marvel and the construction of it. And you can find these old pictures where you just have like a cobbled street and a horse-drawn cart in the foreground and this towering bulk of the hull being built in the background.
Yeah.
And it's almost otherworldly. It's like here you have something out of a Victorian era and there you have someone building this massive ship, which was crazy. But in Ireland, in Belfast, they don't really dwell upon the sinking. It's about the engineering, the technical marvel. In fact, in the Titanic Museum, there's this weird, it's almost like a ride where you sit in this gondola and it kind of takes you through a replica of the shipyard where, you know, you've got people putting in rivets and everything and steel plates moving up and down. It's kind of bizarre, but it's also kind of really cool.
Well, like the bubble works at Chessington.
Possibly. It's been a long time since I've been to Chessington.
Right. Yeah, because it was built in Belfast.
Yep.
Moved down to Southampton, yes?
Yeah, so it's Titanic was the second of three sister ships. The first one was the Olympic. And the Olympic was supposed to be the... it was the famous one, because when it was launched, it was the biggest, most luxurious ship in the world.
Right.
And it had all of the attention and everything was all about the Olympic. And Titanic was just, you know, the middle child, effectively.
Okay.
But yeah, Olympic entered service, I think, in 1911 it would have been. Yeah, Olympic would have been 1911. And it started in service. And then Titanic was to follow the following year. Mm-hmm. In 1912. And Titanic went from Belfast, it went down to Southampton to pick up its passengers and then started on its first voyage.
Yes.
It didn't go well.
Well, the Olympic, and so you said middle child. What was the third one that was created then?
So the third one was called the Britannic.
Okay.
And that, basically, there was two slipways built. So you had Olympic first, and Titanic alongside. And then when Olympic was launched, they started building Britannic. And then something happened. I don't know, an iceberg might have been involved. And then they stopped working on Britannic for a while, yep, for some reason. And then by the time they got around to finishing it, there was a war on. And so the Royal Navy said, nice ocean liner, we'll take it.
That's right.
And they turned it into a hospital ship.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, it did not end well for Britannic.
No, and that is where one of the conspiracy theories heads towards as well, isn't it?
No. The one you're alluding to involves the Olympic.
Oh, is it the Olympic? Oh, okay.
It's the Olympic. So the Olympic, as I said, was launched in 1911. And in, when was it? I think it would have been early 1912. Let me tell you what, man looks up thing. No, it was late 1911. Olympic collided with a cruiser called HMS Hawk.
Yeah.
Now, warships of the time were big proponents of ramming speed. They usually had big, heavy prows to ram the other ship because guns weren't particularly effective or accurate, and iron hulls often made the shots bounce off of them. Mm-hmm. So what they would do is they would use the guns to try and kill the crew or stop the other ship from firing back at them. But to actually do the coup de grace, to kill it, they would ram it. So they had these big, heavy prows. Anyway, HMS Hawk rammed Olympic, put a big old hole in the side of it, lots of flooding. And then the Royal Navy held a inquiry. And the Royal Navy decided it wasn't their fault, it was the Olympic was at fault, and they were not going to pay anything for the repair. Which seems perfectly fair to me, don't you think so?
If Well, they do have guns as well, though, don't they?
Oh, we do have guns, yes.
Yes. So if you have someone with guns pointing at you saying, we're not going to pay for it, then you kind of back down and go, okay, don't you?
Yeah. I do take your point, but this was in court somewhat later.
They still have guns outside.
They did have their guns outside. But they said it's not our fault, it's your fault. So, you know, we hit you, but it's your fault, so you have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And Olympic then had to come out of service, and they had to stop doing the finishing work on Titanic to repair Olympic. Now, the conspiracy theory states, and this has all been disproven, it is utter bullshit, but don't let the facts get in the way of a good conspiracy theory. The conspiracy theory states that the Olympic was so badly damaged it was in fact written off. But because they weren't going to be paid from the collision, they had to get the insurance to pay out on the Olympic.
Right.
And now obviously it had a pre-existing condition, so it wasn't worth as much. So the conspiracy theory states that what they did is they actually swapped the identity of the Titanic and the Olympic around. And then they sent the Olympic out on the voyage, knowing that it would sink. And then when it sank, they would get the insurance money. There was just one small problem with this. Well, there's several problems with this, but it was one particular problem with that particular part of the conspiracy, in that they never fully insured the ships. But that aside, it's a flawless plan.
Well, yeah, you have a very good boat in harbour, but it's bad juju to change a name of a boat, though, isn't it? Or ship?
It entirely depends on who you ask. It is generally frowned upon by sailors to change the name of a ship, but yeah. I think that's only when they're serving on the ship.
Right, okay. So once it comes in, someone else buys it, you can change it, and you start all over again. So that's not a bad thing. Okay.
Yes, but Titanic and Olympic, they were very similar, but there were quite a number of differences externally and internally to both of the ships. So you can look at them and you can clearly see they are different ships.
Wasn't there something about the portholes and the number of portholes on one side, and the Olympic had four? In a certain stretch, there was any number of portholes, but Titanic didn't have that many portholes, which proved that that was the Titanic that went down.
There's different porthole arrangements. There's some different doors because Titanic followed Olympic. When they were building Olympic, they suddenly go, you know what, this is a real pain in the ass. We should do something differently on the next one. Right. So they changed it. And it's the same with the Britannic as well. So, yeah, there's lots of, you know, differences throughout the wreck, which people can go, well, not you can go and have a look at, but people have seen and observed. And seems different. And as is, you know, oh so often the case, a lot of people would have had to have been involved in doing something like this. And someone would have said something.
Mm-hmm. It's like any conspiracy. It's Occam's razor, isn't it? It's the most plausible one is normally the... I can't remember how to say Occam's razor, but I know that Occam's razor exists. But it's normally the easiest solution is the actual correct one. God, that's a terrible way of saying it. You get what I mean, though, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do understand. And, I mean, that's not even the only conspiracy theory involving it. There's one which states that the reason it sank was there was a fire burning inside one of the coal bunkers the entire way. There's another one that it was carrying munitions. I don't know why, but, you know, that always comes up around this sort of time.
Right.
There's a myriad of them. There's several books published about them, because the great thing about conspiracy theories is you're just asking questions. I don't have to prove anything. I'm just asking questions.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough.
But yeah, the conspiracy theories have never particularly interested me because they've always just seemed hokum. You know, a little bit sketchy.
Well, I'm like that on 9/11. It's just... Couldn't it just be terrorists taking over planes and flying them into buildings? It's that simple.
Yeah.
instead of all of this cloak and dagger backstabbing and America knew all about it and turned a blind eye and, you know, thousands of people in it. That doesn't seem plausible. It's just easier to think that what happened actually happened.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely similarities between those. And the story on its own is fascinating enough. It doesn't really need the embellishment because, I mean, so here's another interesting little snippet you might not be aware of. So the Titanic, as I said, sank in 1912. That was his first voyage.
Mm.
But I think some 20 years ago, before that, there was a novel released. And in that novel, it talks about a ship called the Titan that strikes an iceberg and sinks with a huge loss of life. And the Titan was also the largest ship in the world.
Right, okay.
And that came out some... it's called Futility of the Wreck of the Titan. And that was published in 1898.
And it's the human brain that joins the dots, doesn't it, to say that this was all written down in history before.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's one of those ones where, because, you know, no one at the time instantly looked at what happened and goes, oh, look, there's a connection there, everything. That all just came much later.
Right.
In fact, I think it was popularized by in the 1950s when the book A Night to Remember came out, and it references this book in the beginning of that. So that's kind of what brought it to the attention.
Ah, okay. So they showed their workings out.
Exactly. They showed their working just to make sure you realized they weren't just copying stuff.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. It's a good way of doing it.
Yeah, I think so.
So was this a tale of just a ship sailing across, getting unlucky, or was it mismanaged in the respect of they were hastily going across to, they were heading to New York, weren't they?
So they were heading to New York.
Were they racing across? Were they trying to get there in make up time? What was the story with that?
Well, I mean, if you wanted to sum up the story in a single word, that word would probably be hubris.
Okay.
Because, as I said, this was a technological marvel. This was like the Saturn V or Starship. You know, it was on that kind of a technological level at the time. It was just so far beyond what was in the world. I mean, there were other big ships. There was Lusitania and Mauritania. HMS Dreadnought, you know, so the British Navy was building up its battleships and everything. But this was, you know, a hugely symbolic kind of declaration that we have conquered nature. You've seen Gladiator, haven't you? There was that moment when they first see the Colosseum.
Yep.
And one of the guys goes, I didn't know men could build such things.
Yep.
It's like that sort of a moment. It's when you were beholding it, it's just like mind utterly blown. This is bigger than anything we've ever seen before. It moves. It's, you know, it's this shiny, it's modern. It has electricity. It has working plumbing throughout it. It has a swimming pool. It has a gym.
It has, it's dick waving, isn't it? That's what it is.
I mean, as to a certain amount of that, it is, but not necessarily to any, well, I mean, certainly to most nations, but it was also, as I say, it's basically saying, we have conquered nature.
Yeah.
All of the newspapers, the company itself, White Star, never said it, but all of the newspapers declared the ship unsinkable. God himself could not sink this ship, is what they were saying.
Isn't that asking for trouble, though?
Oh, it gets worse. It gets worse. So, you know, God himself could not sink the ship. But in addition to that, you have the lifeboat requirement. And, you know, they knew there was going to be some 2,200 people, I think, on board.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that was the case. But they also thought, you know what? We don't need to have enough lifeboats for all those people, because if we ever get into distress, the ship's not going to sink.
And it's too big to sink, isn't it? It's too big.
That's literally the point I'm making. It is too big to sink. But if it is going to sink, we don't have to worry, because another ship will come along and bail us out. Mm-hmm. All we have to do with these boats is ferry our passengers to the other ship, because all of these ships are moving up and down these corridors. So we're never going to be too far away from a rescue ship. It's absolutely fine. And if anything else, we've got the state of the art with these radios. We have the Marconi radio, and that's just another innovation the ship had. You know, it had a wireless radio system. You know, it was doing the Morse code, but mm-hmm. you know, it could communicate from effectively in the middle of the Atlantic to either side.
Right. Okay. So they actually had proper radio on there, did they?
Yeah, they couldn't talk like we're talking now, but it was all that beep 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 beep.
Okay.
You know,
yep.
all the Morse code stuff. So,
yeah,
absolute technological marvel. They were rightly very proud of this. This was basically it's saying, "Hey, God, what do you think? Yeah, yeah, yeah."
There are some people that probably think if it did sink, the nose would probably touch the floor before the bum went underneath the water.
Well, when Britannic sank in the Mediterranean, that happened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
So the Titanic goes off on its way, on its merry voyage. Now, the Titanic was never meant to be fast. The Cunard line, which was like a competitor company.
Mm-hmm.
Think if you think of Cunard as British Airways, White Star Line was Virgin. That's okay. Sort of a dynamic we've got going on here.
Right, okay.
Good. And Cunard, they had the fast ships. They were going for speed. There used to be a competition called the Blue Ribbon, and if you had the fastest crossing, you were awarded the Blue Ribbon. And Cunard had been kind of sneaky, and they'd actually gotten the Royal Navy to help fund their two big ships, Lusitania and Mauritania, by saying, you know, if there's ever a war, you could borrow these as kind of like auxiliary cruisers.
Oh, okay.
And so to be auxiliary cruisers, they had to be fast, and they had to have certain amendments made for use in the service if they so needed.
Yeah.
But White Star Line, which was kind of owned by J.P. Morgan, yes, that J.P. Morgan, effectively American company. I mean, okay, British company with a shell, but you know, it was American. They weren't getting any government money. And they also weren't really interested in competing as far as speed. They were going for luxury.
Yeah.
And that was the idea. It was like, yeah, if you want to get there quickly, you go with Cunard. But if you want to get there in style,
and
take
have fun on the way there as well.
Absolutely.
And feel like you are king of the world.
And even though the Lusitania and Mauritania were faster, you know, we're talking they could do it in maybe 6 days instead of seven, you know?
Okay.
It's not hugely faster.
That is the time scale that we're looking at from Southampton to New York. That was about 6 or 7 days then?
Yes, something like that. In fact, I'll tell you what, I will have a look here. So the Titanic set sail on April 10th, it set sail, and it kind of bumped in. Its voyage was interrupted, shall we say, on the 14th, and it was still a day or two outside of. Yeah, it was due to arrive on the 17th, so about 6 days was its planned journey time.
Right. So we are rapidly approaching a landmark year, then, aren't we? What, 110 years, isn't it?
Yeah, it's this April will be 110 years.
Yeah.
But as I say, it wasn't about speed, it was about luxury. So I can't say luxury without sounding like one of those guys from the Monty Python sketch.
So how far into the journey did the unthinkable happen then?
Oh, it got pretty far in. So as we say, it departed on the 10th of April and it collided with the iceberg on the night of the 14th. In fact, if I just send this to you here, I'll send this in the chat for you.
Okay.
All right. That is a map And look how tantalizingly close it is to Canada there, to Newfoundland.
Hang on a second. Oh, yes. Okay. So it's done most of it, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was maybe 2 days away from New York.
Yep.
When it collided.
It could see coast.
No, it couldn't see coast.
Could it not?
No. It was still quite a way away from the coast. In the Atlantic, if you're looking at it from a geographic sense, where you have the continental shelf, so that the continent of North America, and some of that's underwater, you can kind of see it in the map there.
Yeah.
That's the Grand Banks, and that is where the continent kind of ends, and there's like a massive underwater cliff where it goes down to the actual proper floor of the Atlantic.
Right.
It was just about there when it sank. But yeah, it was still a couple of days away from New York. It was quite distant. Mm-hmm. But the voyage on the whole had been entirely routine. It was making good time, but it wasn't really speeding. It wasn't in a massive hurry. They wanted to get there in the morning of the 17th. It was due to arrive on the 17th. There's some rumors, suggestions that they actually wanted to arrive late on the 16th, so it would be in the morning papers, because, you know, it takes time to get the news out, doesn't it? You got to get it in the papers.
Of course, yes. And yeah, to surprise people, they weren't expecting it at that time. It's turned up early. What the hell is this? That's amazing.
Yeah, and the Titanic, as I said, is the middle child. It's a big deal for its maiden voyage, but it's not as big a deal as Olympic's maiden voyage was. Mm. This isn't a new thing. This has been done, you know? I mean, yeah, it's pretty good, but I mean, it's been done, hasn't it, you know?
Right. So it's not the first to do this.
No.
Out of these ships.
No, and it's not even the second voyage. You know, Olympic did at least six voyages before it had its little incident.
Right.
So it's nothing new as such. But that's supposition. We don't know that for certain either way. But the accusations that they were speeding recklessly, trying to break a record, doesn't really hold water. See what I did there?
It's really hard not to come up with puns, though, isn't it?
There's a lot of nautical puns to be had. They're fun, though.
Titanic was trying to make waves, yeah, etc. Yes.
But in this particular April in 1912, it was a particularly harsh winter. I don't think winter really counts in the middle of the ocean, but the ice was a lot further south than it normally is at that time of year.
Okay.
So other ships were encountering ice floes and icebergs further down into the Atlantic than you would necessarily usually get at that time of the year. Now, other ships had encountered the ice and had used their radios, their Marconi sets, to warn the Titanic and receive these, but it's the Titanic, unsinkable. Who cares? And we've got shit to do, you know? They weren't overly worried.
People would start to believe this sort of stuff as well, weren't they? About it being unsinkable. People would be reading this, hearing this, and drinking it up, really, wouldn't they?
People believed it right up until the point where the water was lapping at their ankles.
I reckon even then they would be like, nice, fine. Honestly, let's wait until it actually disappears and then say, there's always hope that it won't sink.
Yeah.
Remember, it'll touch the floor before it actually goes under. So we're all good.
So yeah, on the night of the 14th of April, it was a Sunday. There was supposed to be a lifeboat drill on the 14th, but they didn't do that for some reason. Don't know why. They just didn't do it.
Mm.
It's nighttime. Most people have gone to bed. Dinner's been done and served. The men are in the smoking lounge, you know, having their cigars and brandy, as is the way of things.
People are into a routine as well now, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
They've done this for a couple of days. Everyone is into a routine. They have their dinner and dance. They have their whiskies and whatever you want, and cigars, as you say. Mm-hmm. And then they depart. And see you in the morning. See you for breakfast. Looking forward to the beautiful, glorious breakfast in the morning. This is part of their routine. And they're looking, well, looking at their watches and going, oh, only two more days. Two more days and we'll be in port. It'll be brilliant.
Well, you had passengers, I mean, certainly the first class passengers who could afford it, were sending telegrams from the ship to their friends because of the novelty of it.
Oh, very cool.
You know, it's like being on a plane and getting the satellite phone just so you can call someone and say, hey, guess where I am? Yeah? Yeah?
I'm talking to you on a satellite phone.
Yeah. I'm on a plane right now. Yeah. Yeah. Crazy, right?
We've all done it, haven't we?
Well, I haven't. I'm not paying those rates. No. But when I've been on a plane which has Wi-Fi, I've 100% done that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, people were doing that. And the Titanic was steaming along. As I said, other ships had already sent radio warnings that there was ice nearby. And one ship in particular, the Californian, had radioed saying they were stopping because they'd encountered an ice floe and they didn't want to try navigating it in the dark. Because, again, there's no real technology. There's no radar. You can only really see as far ahead of you as you could physically see with the Mark One eyeball.
Yeah.
And Titanic also had a disadvantage that, and you're going to love this one, right? Before the ship departed, I believe the sixth officer was recalled to go to another ship. But when he left, he still had the key to the locker where the binoculars were kept.
Oh, really?
Really.
And so, nobody decided to pick that lock or break into that to get the binoculars out.
Well, why do you need to?
Well, you're not going to sink, are you? So,
no, exactly, it's fine.
Why would you need them?
We'll get it sorted when we get to New York.
Yeah.
So they had no binoculars. And they're up in the crow's nest, you know, on top of the mast, keeping a lookout. And it's about quarter to midnight, so like 11:40, they first spot the iceberg coming out of the darkness ahead of them.
Yeah.
There was no moon on this night, and it was flat calm. So you're not even seeing waves lapping up against the bottom of it.
I was going to ask about this. Is this true about it being like a mill pond, really still? And we know what it's like when you have a full moon. That's why wars and battles were acted upon with a full moon, so you could actually see what you're doing. Or you would have battles when the moon wasn't there because it gives away your position.
Exactly. And they had really no way of seeing it until it was really, 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 really dark. I mean, there was no lights forward of the crow's nest because, you know, you don't want to ruin your night vision.
Yeah.
So they're just there, they're looking out, but they see the iceberg, ring the bell, iceberg right ahead. And the first officer starts to turn the ship. A little bit of contention here about could he have done anything differently? There are schools of thought that if he just rammed the iceberg, ship would have been fine.
Head on.
Just rammed it.
Yeah.
At most, it would have crushed the bow, maybe flooded one or two compartments.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might have had broken limbs from being thrown about, but that would be it. Ship would have been fine.
Yeah.
One of the things he did is he reversed the starboard engine and turned the rudder hard over because reversing that engine would make the ship kind of turn quicker.
Yeah.
If he hadn't have done that, if he'd have kept the engines both ahead, you'd have had more water passing over the rudder so it might have turned quicker.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. I mean, the rudder itself was very small for the size of a ship. It wasn't particularly efficient. But once again, it's not really meant to be efficient. It's meant to go from point A to point B in almost a straight line.
Yeah, it's not there pulling donuts, is it? It's there to guide you, really, and that's it.
Yeah. But fate would have it, it gave the barest of brushes alongside the iceberg.
Okay, and do you believe that this was, it was like the barest of brushes or?
Well, they've actually you can actually, on the wreck, see some parts of the hull which have been opened up. Mm-hmm. And they've done experiments on bits which they brought up from the wreck. And in the actual conditions at the time, the rivets themselves would have become quite brittle.
Right.
So brushing up against it, what it does is it buckles the plates and that pops the rivets.
Yep.
So it doesn't actually tear a hole in the side of the ship. It pops these rivets and it kind of like dot, 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 dot along the side for about six compartments.
So does this peel the actual skin off?
No, it doesn't peel it. No. It just bends it, buckles it.
Okay.
But where you've got the plates, which kind of overlap one over the other,
mm-hmm.
if you pop the rivets between the two, the water can get in there. As you know, you don't need a big hole to let water in.
No. No, that's
and
right.
So five of the watertight compartments were breached. And that was basically it, because the ship could survive with any four of its watertight compartments flooded,
mm-hmm.
but not five. One of the other small design flaws, a slight thing that was overlooked, is the watertight compartments didn't go all the way up to the deck.
No, there were only a couple of levels, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
But
so what would happen is the water would fill up the forward part of the ship, it would pull the bow down, yeah. and then the water would spill over into the next one, and then into the next one, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, so it has a route to get all the way through the ship, doesn't it?
Needless to say, at that moment, the chief designer, Thomas Andrews, who was on board the ship, realised there was a bit of a design flaw, something he might have overlooked.
He hurriedly rushed back to his drawings and corrected them, didn't he? And went, no, there we go, we'll be the next one when we get rescued.
Yes.
In the morning. By the bigger ships.
Well, so in the immediate aftermath, they stop to assess the damage. And it's very apparent very quickly that they'd be fucked. And it's also very apparent very quickly to the captain just how fucked they are. Because they know they don't have enough boats for the passengers.
That must be a terrifying experience. From the passengers' perspective, from the perspective of, you know how damaged you are, there is no going back on this, you cannot repair this, it's going to happen. It's just going to happen in a couple of hours, though.
Mm-hmm.
That must be terrifying. And then you have to act on that. And then knowing the lifeboat situation as well. Because that must be the immediate thought. Well, how do we save everyone? Well, it's probably, well, how do we save most of us? And I can't imagine how stressful, bonkers that situation must be.
As you say, absolutely terrifying to... And I honestly imagine it's probably what quite a few scientists and climatologists feel like these days. Yeah. Of like, you fully understand just how fucked everyone is.
Yes.
And everyone else is kind of blissfully going along, going, it'll be fine, it's good. The ship's unsinkable, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the torture of knowing what's going on, isn't it? As you say, like the people that know what's happening with the climate, they're looking at it going, no, you need to do something now. And they're like, well, you know, there's millions more to be earned through oil and gas, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
No, let's not do this. Let's do this instead.
Yeah.
No. I want some more cigars to chomp on. So we need to make more billions. It's stupid. Honestly, sometimes I flipping hate humans. Really yes. do.
Meanwhile, back on the Titanic. So... They've assessed it. They know they're kind of screwed. They start by getting the boats ready to be launched. But and they also start using the radio to reach out to other ships. They start sending out the distress call. But what's kind of torturous is they can see a ship on the horizon.
Right, okay.
So they're there, middle of the ocean, and on the horizon they can see... lights from a ship.
So
and they tr-
Do they have ways of communicating with this? I know we have the Morse code. Do we have flares and stuff like that?
Twas getting to that. Okay. So they can see the ship. So it's not answering on the radio, on the Marconi set. So they try using a Morse lamp, and there's no response to that. So then they start launching flares, and they fire flares, distress rockets, and they don't get any response to that. Now, that ship is reputed to be the SS Californian. I say reputed to be. It almost certainly was the Californian, but some people will maintain there was another ship. That whole conspiracy theory about them faking the sinking of the Titanic, they say it was this other ship there, but the ship was there. Now, at this time, although that ship did have a radio, it only had one radio operator, and it wasn't required to be manned 24 hours a day.
And he was in his bunk.
He'd gone to bed.
Yeah.
He'd gone to bed. The captain was also kind of dozing in the map room behind a bridge, and the lookouts came to him and said, there's a ship on the horizon. We can see it. And he goes, well, try, you know, using the Morse lamp. So they tried a Morse lamp. But they're far enough away that they can't really make it out. It just looks like a flickering light.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start seeing the rockets, and they go, the ship's there and it's firing rockets. Now, the only reason the ship would fire rockets is it's in distress.
Yeah.
This is widely known at the time. So they go to the captain and they said, the ship's firing rockets. And the captain goes, it's probably just some company signals. It's fine. Don't worry about it. And went back to bed.
Really?
Really?
That's incredible. Why wouldn't you go to investigate?
Because he was tired. He was focusing on himself.
Probably a party or something like that. They're probably having a booze up.
Well, he didn't really know what it was, but he just didn't care. And he would regret that for the rest of his life afterwards because, he got raked through the coals after that.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
So, this is about midnight then. So it's about 20 minutes after it's hit the iceberg.
So you have opportunity to save this situation already, don't you? And that's gone.
Yeah. If the Californian had come to the rescue, they could have done what the lifeboats were meant to be done, which is transfer the passengers from one ship to the other. Mm-hmm. You'd be fine. Might even have been able to help by applying additional pumps to pump the water out. Could have saved the ship, but it is not to be. So anyway, they've sent out SOS, and any ship which received said it's coming towards them as quick as it can. They estimate the Titanic will sink in about 2 hours.
Yeah.
The closest ship, the Carpathia, is 4 hours away.
Cool.
Now, I'm not some fancy big city lawyer here, but that number's bigger than two.
Yes.
So they realize they're just fucked. But they have another problem now as well. They have to try to convince the passengers to get into the lifeboats. Now, picture this. You're on this big, safe, solid, luxurious wonder of modern technology.
Mm-hmm.
The most amazing thing you've ever seen. And you're being asked to get into a rickety little wooden boat and then lowered some 60 feet down into the freezing Atlantic. And you can't yet tell the ship's sinking because the lights are still on.
Yeah.
It's still warm inside. What are you going to do?
Well, it's that distance as well. The water's not lapping at your ankles yet, is it?
Yeah.
So why the hell would you want to leave the warm comfort of your cabin for a freezing boat?
And given the time that it was, the order was sent for women and children first.
Yeah.
Now, it's women and children first, but some also took this to infer women and children only. But the net result was those lifeboats could probably hold about 1,200 people in total.
Yeah.
But none of them were launched full.
None of them?
Not a single lifeboat was launched full.
Okay.
In the end, about 700 people survived. And the boats could hold about 1,200 people, but they just couldn't get people into boats because some people just didn't want to go into boats at all.
Mm-hmm.
Some people were like, you know, I'm not going without my husband. And, you know, because they wouldn't go, they wouldn't join it. And third class were straight up just kept down below. They weren't allowed up on the deck.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Horrifying is the word you're looking for, but yes, it is.
Yes. Well, the class system is always horrifying, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, that was certainly on full display there. And yeah, the water came into the boat, and the boat went into the water, and then the boat did do sink.
So some of the things that we've heard, and I know they're portrayed in the movie as well. I'm doing my best to steer clear of that bloody movie.
Look, let's just talk about the movies very, very quickly.
It was pretty accurate, though, wasn't it?
It's pretty accurate, and it was certainly a labor of love. The sinking isn't terribly accurate.
Okay.
That's kind of amped up for the drama. If you do want to watch a fantastic film about the sinking of the Titanic, though, do check out A Night to Remember, which I do believe is on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
And that's from 1955. And James Cameron straight up just takes lots of bits from that film and puts them in his one. But A Night to Remember doesn't make up any characters. It embellishes aspects of it, but it's all people who were there. And you had actual survivors kind of helping Walter Lord when he wrote the original book, and you're supervising it.
It is on YouTube.
Hmm.
Okay, I'm going to be watching that later on. Thank you very much.
No, it's a great film. It's got Kenneth Moore? Yeah, Kenneth Moore, that British actor. You know, everyone knows him when you see him. You go, oh, that one. He was in everything in the 50s.
Okay. So what do we know about? I know there was like a violin players.
So on you the had ship. The band. Yeah, you had the ship's band. I say the ship's band. They were there for first class. But they went up on deck and they were just playing music to keep everyone calm and keep spirits up. And they played away. And towards the end, when all the boats had gone and then everyone kind of realized it was game over. Every man for themselves, effectively. This was probably when the water starts coming up over the bridge and you could start seeing it from the deck.
Yeah.
You know, so at that point you realise, things probably aren't going quite as well as we were hoping.
That's right.
But the band was like, well, no one's paying attention to us. We're dismissed. And then they started playing Nearer My God to Thee, which was a popular hymn at the time. And that kind of went down in legend as, you know, they played this stirring hymn as the water laps around their ankles. I don't think any of the band survived. Yeah, the entire band died.
Just chilling. Oh, God.
It's really well done in Night to Remember as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's... I don't want to go too much into the sinking just because films like A Night to Remember and even Titanic have... They tell the story really well for the most part.
Yeah.
And nothing I can really say can really get that across. I will say the whole thing about the first officer shooting himself, that's completely apocryphal. There's no evidence that actually happened. That's, once again, just drama. The ship's architect, Thomas Andrew, as I said, was on the ship. And when he realized it was sinking, stayed with the ship, you know, presumably distraught.
Yeah.
And the owner, J. Bruce Ismay, who runs White Star Line, he's always portrayed as the villain in the films. But the evidence seems to be that he tried to help as much as he could do. And when it became clear that no one else was getting in one of the lifeboats, he got in.
Okay.
And he, you know, how dare he survive? He was utterly vilified after that.
Yeah. But if no one else is listening, no one else is going for it.
Well, it's an empty seat and it's, you know... This, you know, I said earlier that there was meant to be a lifeboat drill on the Sunday.
Yeah.
But it never happened. So no one really knows what they're supposed to be doing.
That's right. Okay. So what does this mean?
One sec. Before I go on, I will just say that as the ship was, you know, the ship sinks and there's people in the water and Carpathia comes to rescue them, which is a Cunard ship. But Olympic was also coming as well.
Oh, really? But, okay.
Yeah. Well, because it was at sea at the time. But they, Carpathia said to Olympic, after the ship had sunk, probably best you just go back to England, because the last thing these people want to see is the exact same ship coming to rescue them.
Right. Fair enough. Don't quite get that, but...
Well, it's a psychological thing, you know. You've just witnessed this horror of this ship sinking and then one looking exactly the same arrives. The radio operator stayed at the post again until the electricity died. And I don't think any of the engineering staff survived, because they stayed down in the engine room until almost the very end to make sure the electricity stayed on. Yep. So there was lights and so people could, you know, see what they were doing and keep calm.
Well, I thought that was done quite well in the actual film of the James Cameron version. Mm-hmm. With all like the steam blasts and stuff like that. And that was one of the moments where I was like, okay, what would actually happen there? But you would have these huge boilers and seawater rushing in and just flash boiling, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not too sure exactly of the mechanics of that, but it just seems terrifying. And also just being trapped down there with that as well, just no hope whatsoever.
Yeah, it's not the job in itself absolutely sucked. You know, being a stoker, standing in front of those fires, just shoveling coal all day long.
I feel like that every day, mate, honestly. Really do. Keeping the wheels of industry turning.
God bless you, sir. God bless you. Your little flat cap on.
So I want to ask about the aftermath. Do you know much about the aftermath?
Oh, yes.
From this and the fallout from this and what safety procedures were carried out after this then?
So, well, yeah, I mean, this was a 9/11 scale event, mm-hmm. in so much as it absolutely changed people's perceptions of what the world was. Like I said, you've gone from, you know, we have conquered nature. There's nothing we can't do. To nature just went, hold my drink. Here's the ice.
Exactly. Yes.
And so it absolutely dented the hubris of man at the time. And their first reaction is obviously, as is always the case in these things, is who are we blaming for this?
Yeah. Someone has to fall for this, don't they?
Oh, yeah. So you had... there was two inquiries. There was a British inquiry and an American inquiry. You know, they wanted to know, was the ship's design flawed? Was the captain being reckless? Was it speeding? Was it, you know, an attack? You know, all of these things. You know, in the end, it was an iceberg. There was an iceberg where there shouldn't have been one. It hit it. There you go. They absolutely raked the captain of the Californian, Stanley Lord, over the coals. Mm-hmm. He was never prosecuted. But yeah, in the court of public opinion, his name was Mud.
Yeah.
And J. Bruce Ismay also was, because the society at the time, you know, it's still chivalry and everything, isn't it? How dare you survive when so many women and children died?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, hundreds and hundreds of third class died, but also many famous millionaires died as well. John Jacob Astor, who was one of the richest men in the world at the time. It's effectively like saying Jeff Bezos died on this ship.
Wow.
That was kind of the level. It was like saying Bill and Melinda Gates, Jeff Bezos, and William Buffett all died on the Titanic.
And just wiped out like that.
Just wiped out. And so there was this, you know, to use the terminology, the great and the good were on the ship, because, you know, it was big fancy. It was a social thing to be seen on this. They all died. Several of those families hired a ship to go out and try and retrieve bodies. So they hired a cable laying ship called the Mackie Bennett, which went out and tried to recover bodies, and recovered quite a few bodies. It could only embalm a few, though. So basically what would happen is if it found a body, if it was a wealthy first-class passenger, And if it was in reasonable condition, it was embalmed, put in a coffin, and then put in the hold with a ton of ice that I had on board. If it was third class, or, you know, was too far gone, it was buried at sea. There was a incident, though, when they found the body of a baby, and the crew were so utterly moved that they paid out of their own pocket to have the baby taken back to Nova Scotia and to be buried there in the mass graves that they have there for Titanic.
Yeah.
Which you can still go and see today. So that was the immediate aftermath. But after that, in terms of the world, they started doing so one of the rules, which was if your ship has a radio, and it should have a radio, it has to be manned 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
They also simplified the communications and for SOS. And they also instituted the International Ice Patrol. So basically, they would monitor where icebergs were in the world. And report back to shipping. And touch wood, no ship has been sunk by an iceberg since.
Good. Good.
So, yeah.
Because that was we did an episode, it must be a couple of years ago now, of Where Were You?
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's one of the only ones where we set out to do a part two, definitely, and we still haven't got around to doing the part two yet.
Funnily enough, there's been quite a bit of history happening of late. So
yeah, and we didn't cover 9/11 for some reason. I think it was because there was other people to have on as well to have that conversation. But I remember that and the aftermath and just the shock from it, and that reverberated around the world, didn't it? And this must have had a very similar sort of effect, mustn't it?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit overshadowed in that 2 years later, there's World War One, which kind of sucked up a certain amount of the oxygen in the room.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, it's the fact that we're here 112 years later still talking about it, and it's not a niche thing that only I mean, you know what the Titanic was, a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. Even before the film came out, it was, you know, in the public's zeitgeist. And as I said, its sister ship, the Britannic, sank in World War One. The Lusitania, which was a contemporary, also sank. And those are ships which people don't really know about unless you're really into that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, ocean liners and everything. So there's something about Titanic. It was such a cultural shock. It's like the Hindenburg as well, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
It's resonated throughout history as this, you know, cultural touchstone. Because it was just such a blow to the human psyche.
I suppose, yeah. Yeah. It needs to have that effect for it to sustain the longevity of our history, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's the whole, those who don't remember history are doomed to repeat it. We do a lot of repeating stuff.
Oh, there's a lot of repeating going on. It's almost blind copying. It's can we just have a look at your answers? Thank you very much. I'll just write them down. Not going to change anything, and we're going to carry on. It's just dumb, man. Absolutely dumb. But we're not talking about that just yet. I'm not ready to talk about that just yet.
Yeah, we'll save that for a future one.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So. Oh, hopefully.
All right. So I mean, in the years that follow, though, it kind of remained in the mind's eye. Several films. I mean, there was a film about the sinking of the Titanic that was released like 10 months after it sank. And it actually starred a woman who had been on the Titanic.
That's bonkers. I didn't know that. It is bonkers.
It's been lost because, you know, films of the time, many copies weren't made, and that one has been lost. But there was a film. It was like released almost straight away afterwards to capitalize on it, basically. There was a famous propaganda film made in Germany in the 1940s about the hubris of the British captain speeding through the Jews in first class causing the sinking, keeping the brave Aryan Germans in third class down and die. It was propaganda bullshit.
Jeez.
Because
is that available still?
It is still available. In fact, it's a very well-made film. and In a Night to Remember, which was made in 55, I want to say. Man looks up. 58, right? There's actually two scenes from the German film in it. They just stole them for special effects.
They just cut and paste, yeah.
Yeah, they just cut them out. Well, you know. Goebbels is dead. What are you going to do about it?
I'd be interested in watching it just from a historical fact-finding episode.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see what it's like. Just to see how... Oh.
The thing you have to understand with German cinema in the 1940s is German cinema in the 1920s and the 1930s was the best in the world. Mm-hmm. They made Metropolis. You had people like Fritz Lang driving the art forward. So, and I'm not saying Fritz Lang did any Nazi videos. He escaped before that happened. But a lot of that institutional knowledge was still in Germany.
Yeah.
And then you had people, and I can't remember what her name is, but she did The Triumph of the Wills. And that's a film about the Nuremberg rallies. And it's so iconic that even today, like Star Wars, Force Awakens, references scenes from that film.
Really?
Yeah. So,
okay.
Despicable content, pure propaganda, but from a technical standpoint, there's merit in them.
Yeah, no matter how despicable they are, I'd be interested to... Yeah, I would be interested just to see what that is about.
You know what that is? That's a future episode. Stick it on the list.
It is a future. Yeah, we'll have to talk about that after. Remind me after.
Okay. But
yeah, it's not from a macabre sort of position or a... Oh, look at this car crash that's just happened. Let me just slow my car down to rubberneck on this. It's not that. It's more interested at the art and what was actually being said to find out what mistakes were made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was 43. I think there was a documentary on that one as well, which you can check out. But there were several films made. But it really kind of came back into the public consciousness in 1958 with A Night to Remember,
okay,
which was based off of a book. That was a fantastic film. And as I said, it's on YouTube. Check it out. It's great. Now, there was some other... There's a film which is objectively terrible, but I really like it, that came out in like the late 70s. Right. And that's called Raise the Titanic.
The title rings a bell with me.
So Raise the Titanic, it was released in 1980. It's based on a Clive Cussler book. And it was a huge, huge flop. It cost $40 million to make.
Ouch.
It made $7
million. Oh, dear me.
They built a huge model of a Titanic. So it was something like 50 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And they used that for the raising scene, the effects. It's a terrible film. But like I said, as a kid, I was obsessed with anything Titanic-wise. So someone show me Raise the Titanic. I'm like, I'm watching this and I loved it. it's utterly bonkers. The story is basically they want to make a missile shield to stop Russian missiles, but it needs a rare element. And the element was taken on the Titanic. So they have to raise the ship to get this element. And this was before they actually found the wreck itself. So they didn't know the ship had split in half. So in it, they kind of bring it up. But yeah, it's cheesy as fuck. It has an amazing soundtrack, though. The soundtrack's by John Barry, who did a lot of the kind of classic James Bond soundtracks.
Mm-hmm.
It's an absolutely amazing soundtrack. But yeah, I have very fond memories of Raised by Titanic. It's got Alec Guinness in it as well, man.
Is it?
Alec Guinness is in it.
Oh, yeah, there he is. Yes.
Yep. But yeah, I also think that might well be on YouTube as well. But that's a film I love. But most attention kind of came back around to the Titanic in the mid-80s when they discovered the wreck.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we spoke a little bit about that at the beginning. Bob Ballard and the French team, they found that. The French team got a little salty that Ballard was getting all of the attention about that. Understandable, you know? They had worked hard on it as well. Now, Ballard swore that he would not disturb the wreck. He was just going to go down, photograph it, take pictures. But the French, a little bit less, I would say, fucked about that. So,
Disco Stew and their busy fingers.
Oh, a little bit. So the, where the Titanic sank is international waters. It's in the middle of the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a military ship, so it's not covered under those ones. The law states that if you want to own a wreck, to claim salvage, you must raise a part of it. And so the French, with a company who call themselves RMS Titanic Inc., brought up a piece of a wreck. And this was in like 1987, so like right after Ballard had gone down and filmed it. And they claimed salvage on the wreck. And then we entered a period where they were basically trying to raise and sell stuff. Now, the US and most of you, I think most of the world has basically said you can't do that. They've said you're not allowed to sell anything that you raise. And you're not allowed to bring up anything from the wreck itself, only the debris field. But they have caused huge amounts of damage to the ship just by the amount of people who've gone to visit it.
Yes.
And I mean, people have been married on the ship. Can you believe that?
They got married on the ship.
Yeah, they've gone down in a submersible, landed on the deck, been married in the submersible, and then come up. It's destroying. I mean, the wreck is deteriorating anyway. It's one thing when you see the state of it. So the ship broke in half when it sank.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been under the water. I mean, at the time, it was 60 years. 80 years by the time we got to the Cameron film, and 112 by now. The ship is decaying. It won't be there in probably another 50 years.
Right.
There's been propositions put forward by people like Bob Ballard that you could preserve the ship as it currently is, but it would cost millions and no one's going to pay for that.
Well, there's plenty of billionaires in the world, aren't there?
Yeah, but they're all busy racing to Mars.
That's true, yes. They're looking to sink their own ships in a different place.
Exactly.
I remember having a conversation with a bloke at work, and it was a quiet day at work, and he proposed...
To you? That...
And then after that, he proposed. And then after... That you build...
You're stuck in a loop now, aren't you?
Yeah. Anyway, he proposed. And then after... No, see, I can't do it too many... Rule of three, don't do it too many times. Don't push it too much. He said you could build like a concrete ring around it. So we go down to the seabed. We build a concrete ring around the Titanic, yes? And we start building that up all the way up to the surface of the sea and over the top a little bit. Then you pump the water out of that all the way down to the Titanic. Then you can have access to the Titanic.
I mean, it's not the craziest idea that's been put forward.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of you...
Huh?
Oh, it's maybe like the second craziest idea there is. The craziest one I've heard is to encase the wreck in liquid nitrogen so that it would freeze into an iceberg and the ice would then raise up to the surface.
So an iceberg saves the Titanic.
Well, there's not much left to save, but that was that was certainly what was put forward there.
Mm-hmm.
The wreck itself is deteriorating. It was going to deteriorate without the assistance of the vandalism, and it is vandalism, and the damage from ships which have gone down there. But that's hastened it. When Ballard got there, he found what he christened as rusticles. And basically, this bacteria is eating the iron in the ship's hull.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, it's got what look like stalactites and stalagmites kind of coming down from all the surfaces. It's like the iron is weeping. And it's...
And it's all falling in on itself, isn't it?
Yeah. The ship itself, it was very badly damaged from the sinking because it broke in two. It didn't break in two like in the Cameron film, though. It didn't kind of put the stern vertical in that dramatic bit where the guy hits it and then he kind of goes, whoa, 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 like a TIE fighter in the asteroid field. He didn't do that. It basically, the stern rose up, so it was just peeking out of the water, but then the weight broke it and it probably stayed together on the surface and then was pulled under from that. But the bow, when it sank, was full of water, and because it had been filling with water. So as that went down, the pressure was equalized. So it impacted, collapsed, mostly intact, though. But the stern was mostly full of air in air pockets. And as it went down, the pressure crushed the hull as the air kind of exploded and escaped. So that's why it looks like a bomb site.
I see. Okay. I just find it so... I know you said that it's vandalism. Yeah, it is. We can't not touch stuff, can we? It doesn't matter what it is. It's kind of sacred ground that nobody would really visit. But
it's an interesting discussion. And this was actually... Do you remember the question that Sean and Melissa used to do?
Yes.
We were going to do this as an episode, but we just never got around to doing it because they stopped recording. At what point does something stop being a grave and become an archaeological site? Because there are no bodies at the Titanic.
No.
Most of them died on the surface and were carried away. And any which kind of fell down to the ocean floor now, the bodies have been eaten away by organisms and sea life and bacteria. All that's left are usually boots. You can still see where boots landed side by side.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people have speculated that there might be bodies still buried deep inside the hull where it's like low oxygen, but I haven't seen any evidence to support that.
Yeah,
I think anything organic that far down will have been removed. So when we say it's a grave, it's only a grave in a kind of philosophical sense, but it is vandalism because they weren't bringing these bits up for museum. They're bringing them up to sell. Now, it's turned out they've not been allowed to sell them. They've had to put them into exhibits, and they can charge you to visit the exhibits, but they haven't been able to sell any of these items.
But even just going down there and laying a plaque on it to say, don't touch this, putting the metaphorical velvet rope around it, that is damaging that site, isn't it?
Yeah.
People getting married on it. I know there's nothing to stop them from doing it, but but you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't do that. So what gives them the right to do that?
It's a difficult one because I agree they shouldn't, but there is something about visiting or seeing it. I mean, I've been to the exhibit in Las Vegas with the stuff they brought up from the ship.
Mm-hmm.
They have the bell, and once again, like I said, they're not allowed to take anything from the ship itself. They just so happened to have the bell that was in the crow's nest.
Oh,
okay. I'm just saying that was on the ship. But they have the bell that was rung to warn of a iceberg right ahead. They've actually brought up a piece of the hull that was in the debris field. They raise that and you can go and see that. And it's fascinating. It's captivating. In fact, there's an exhibit on in London right now with some exhibits from the Titanic you can go and see. It's down in Docklands, I think it is. And I've gone and seen it. And I've always been a little bit conflicted about it, but it's in a way no different than going to a museum to look at these items. it does connect you to this history in a very real way.
I suppose stuff that's already been removed from there now, there has to be a, like, people find it and go, well, okay, well, let's bring some stuff up and either try and sell it or show it to other people because this is important. Okay, I get that first urge. But then the touching after. Like I said, because you can, it doesn't mean you should or should even think about doing it. This is a site for the world. And it's like a little museum for the world to know about and to learn about and to hear about and read about and make movies about. But then destroying the actual thing, it just disappears into dust, and then that's it. The last person lands on there and, oh, sorry. Well, that was it. It's all gone now. Sorry. It's all blown away in the tides.
It's going to implode. And you know, kind of tangentially, in the Pacific Ocean, there's a number of warships from the Second World War, battleships and destroyers, that have disappeared. They've been salvaged illegally by nefarious individuals because the steel is valuable. It all predates the atomic testing that was taking place. So it's valuable for medical equipment and scientific instruments. And it's also just, you know, lots of high-grade steel and valuable metals. And there are entire cruisers from the Second World War, wrecks, that have just disappeared now. When they've gone to look for them, all that remains now is the indentation in the seafloor.
And that's it.
And that's just been taken. Now, Titanic is too deep, and it's too well-known for that to really happen. Mm-hmm. But I would rather have some things in a museum to see than it be just kind of taken as scrap and illicitly and, you know, and disappear off the face of the earth. But it is
robbed.
Yeah, I mean, effectively robbed. But yeah, the Titanic is too deep. But in a, like I said, probably about 50 years, maybe a bit more, maybe a bit less, it will collapse in on itself. Mm-hmm. And then in a few hundred years, all that will be left is a iron ore deposit with things like the engines will probably still be there because the metals that they're made of don't corrode. The propellers will still be there, but the iron will all go.
Yeah.
And then there'll be no more Titanic.
I've got no problems in it naturally decaying.
Uh-huh.
It's when it's unnaturally decayed with people bashing into it and just touching. Stop touching. Honestly, just stop touching.
Well, I said earlier about the Britannic, its sister ship, and that sank in the Mediterranean. And that's a lot more accessible than the Atlantic. Mm-hmm. And Britannic's in a lot better condition. It's in shallower water. And as I said, it actually did hit... okay, Britannic... was turned into a hospital ship in the First World War.
Yeah.
And it struck a mine. Now, they'd done a lot of upgrades to Britannic to make sure what happened to Titanic wouldn't happen. But unfortunately, it failed to take one thing into account.
Right.
People. Now, it was a hospital ship. It was arriving to start taking in patients. So what they were doing is they were getting the ship ready and they'd opened up all the portholes to air out the wards.
Yeah.
And they were also in the middle of a crew change, which means all the watertight doors were open in anticipation of the crew change happening.
Oh, no.
So it struck this mine and it's relatively shallow water. It's a lot close. I mean, they can see islands nearby. They thought they could make it. Mm-hmm. But as the water starts coming in, the watertight doors won't close properly because they've been warped from the force of the explosion. And as the ship starts to go down, water starts coming in through these open portholes. And they try to actually sail towards one of the islands to beach themselves. But doing that drives the ship into the water faster. Yeah. It took Titanic 2 hours and a half to sink. Britannic sank in like 20 minutes.
Ouch. Yeah. Because it was driving through the water and it was just forcing itself full of water.
It was,
yes.
It was full of holes. Here's an interesting one. Someone from the Titanic was on the Britannic.
How's your luck?
Right?
Oh, jeez.
Well, she worked for White Star. She'd been on the Olympic when it had the collision with HMS Hawk, was on the Titanic when it sank, and then was on Britannic as a nurse then.
And survived?
And survived.
Well, yeah, okay, fair enough. She's walking around going, well, I'm all right.
I wish there was a lottery that I could play.
Yeah. On the flight back, though, you'd be like, oh, God. Oh, it's you, isn't it? Oh, no.
Oh, God. And yeah, that pretty much brings us up to date to now. As we mentioned, there was a film with James Cameron. It's pretty good. Actually, it's very good. I like Titanic.
I do as well.
Yeah,
I secretly like it. But I have to... No, it's rubbish, isn't it? But I secretly like it.
It's a great film. It's fanciful. I think it's a very well-made film, but I do think A Night to Remember is a not only a better telling of the story, I do think it's a better film overall, but that's just down to my particular tastes.
Yeah.
On those things. But yeah, there you go. That's my Titanic obsession. There you go.
With the one that you said was full of holes and sank, the sister ship.
The Britannic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how deep was the water that sunk in?
Well, it's in the Mediterranean off of the coast of Greece. In fact, I'll tell you what, I will hitch in. There you go, Britannic. So that sank in the Aegean Sea. Now, Britannic was 882 feet long. And somewhere here it will tell me it sank in water. Well, it was less than 882 feet, basically, because it hit the bottom. And when you look at the wreck today, the entire bow is kind of bent upwards because it landed on its starboard side. Yeah, starboard side. Right. But the bow is kind of bent up at a really sharp angle.
Wow. Just thinking of the forces that create that as well.
The thing with the Britannic, though, it's in a... You can dive it if you have the training and the equipment, but it's right at that limit where if you're not careful, you will die. You have to come up slowly to avoid the bends and all that.
Oh, it's that deep, is it? Okay.
Yeah, so some people have died just visiting the wreck.
Right, but because we're not talking like Pearl Harbor shallow type thing. Then.
No, we're not talking that shallow. We're talking deep enough it will kill you if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's relatively accessible. There was talks at one point about making an underwater museum there, but I don't think a huge amount of has happened on that. Here you go. I will send you.
Because Pearl Harbor, don't they have like jetties that you can walk over the ships and see
them? So there's two ships are still remain in Pearl Harbor. There's the USS Arizona and the USS Utah. And they're both, I mean, when the Arizona sank, all of the superstructure was out of the water. It's only the hull itself, which is underwater.
Right. Okay.
And the other ship, the Utah, it rolled over and then they started to salvage it. But in the course of the salvage, it wasn't worth anything. And we decided, this is too much like hard work. We'll just leave it.
Okay.
So we left it.
Right. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's it's pretty much it. Olympic survived. It had... It sank a U-boat in the First World War.
Nice.
Yeah. Ran it over.
Ran it over?
Yeah. Well, it rammed it and sank it.
Okay, fair enough.
And it accidentally sank a lightship in the 1920s.
Oh, but someone's just driving that and just bashing into stuff, aren't they?
Yeah, at this point, it's just like, yeah, come at me, bro. but the financial crash and the oil crisis of the the financial crash of the 1930s, the Depression, led to Olympic being scrapped then. So it survived longer than both of its sisters.
Yeah. And this is a story that's just going to be regurgitated constantly, isn't it? This is a story that's never going to leave us. It is a reminder that we need to learn from as well, isn't it?
I think it's a very pertinent story today because, like I said, there is a certain level of hubris going around, perhaps. I definitely think there are lessons which could be learnt in terms of maybe not assuming that if you just go full speed ahead, everything will be absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I'm just sending you a picture of a Britannic in the chat. So there you go. You can. I'm trying to send you a picture of a Britannic if a paste thing would work. I think it will continue because it's a story that is relatively timeless. It's a simple story and it kind of transcends national cultural ideals. You know, it's one of those ones where it's easy to understand.
Yeah.
There's a really interesting looking, I mean, they call it a game, but I think it's more just like a virtual walk around that's being developed where they're making a perfect virtual recreation that you can walk around. And there's like a free demo you can download and like walk arounds on YouTube, but you can walk around the Titanic, which looks fascinating. And they've also, they've done a video showing the sinking in real time, not with people, but it just kind of shows, you know, how the ship goes down and you know.
Are they going to do that as like a VR experience, do you reckon?
Yeah, that's the thing. So you can just walk around it and...
Oh my God. Okay, I'll be interested in looking at that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'll send you a link to the YouTube video. You can check that out. But yeah, that's interesting.
Hmm.
I think that's kind of it. There's talks of making there is a hotel in China that is being built which looks exactly like the Titanic. It's landlocked, but then they will build it as a building and then put water around it. Mm-hmm. And there's this crazy Australian bloke who keeps insisting he's going to build a replica of the Titanic.
I've heard this as well, yes.
And he's going, any time now we're going to start it. The thing with the Titanic, though, is when they were building the museum in Belfast, there was talk of building the museum in a replica of the Titanic. But they said they didn't want to do that because people's idea of Titanic is much bigger than the actual ship is. Because compared to modern cruise liners, it was tiny.
Yeah. The big cruise things, they're like cities on the water now, aren't they?
Well, the top of Titanic's funnels probably wouldn't go past the hull of these cruise liners.
Incredible.
Yeah. So if you built it and people went and see it, they're going to be like, is that it?
Mm-hmm.
So instead, they like draw the outline and they kind of... The Titanic Museum in Belfast, and it is really, really good. If you're ever over there, I do recommend checking it out. But it's kind of shaped to kind of suggest what the bow is like. But it's, it's all about kind of giving the impression and giving the feeling rather than being an actual recreation.
Use your imagination instead of actually standing there and have a representation of it, which you'll be disappointed about.
Exactly, yeah. You know, it's your imagination will make it bigger than it actually is.
Yeah.
The other thing they've got there in Belfast is the ship was too big to get into the harbour in Cherbourg in France. So it had tenders that would ferry the passengers backwards and forwards from the shore to the ship.
Okay.
And one of those tenders is in Belfast now as well. So you can go and see that. So that's a ship that was built to service the Titanic and Olympic, and you can go and see that.
Nice. Well, when I'm over there, if I'm over there, then I will definitely be
I'm sure they have lifts over there that need repairing, mate.
I don't want to go over on holiday and do that as well. Come on, man. I want to work on the space lift, but that's it.
The space elevators, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great. That's not going to happen, though.
No, not in our lifetime. No.
Cool, man. Well, thank you very much. That's been... It's been nice to be reminded of it, because it does ebb and flow in the memory of what happened, and just actually recognizing it as well, you know, with what's going on in the world at the moment. You don't tend to focus on stuff like this. You focus on stuff of what's going on. So it's nice to be reminded of it.
Yes. And I would like to say, if anyone would like to buy me the Lego set, please do. I will allow you to buy it for me, because I would really like to build that Lego set.
How much is that?
Hang on. It's 500 quid.
Really?
Yeah, really. Have you seen it?
Oh, it's eBay. It's like for 700 quid.
Yeah, it's 545 on the actual Lego website. But this thing is fucking huge.
How many Lego figures do you get with it?
I don't think you get any figures with it, which is disappointing. But it does have kind of an interior, because it breaks into three parts.
Oh, and so you can lift the lid off, yeah?
Well, if you go to the Lego website itself, here you go, I'll send you the link again in the chat. This is great for people playing along at home.
No, I found it. It's cool. Okay. Got it.
But yeah, you can kind of like see the engines and all the decks, and I go, that's kind of cool.
Oh, that is nice, isn't it? I want 1,300 Lego figures to come with it, though.
Well, you could just scatter them around the side. Ooh, nice. Yeah. That's a bit of bad taste, isn't it?
I think we're allowed to, well, yeah, we're allowed to make little jokes.
It's been
really
long enough
good.
Now, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, look at the engines in there as well.
Right.
Oh, I didn't know this existed. I like that. That's a real good one. It's not too big either. No, you couldn't have Lego. You'd have to have, you know, the little astronaut that you got with the Saturn V. The teeny tiny ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have to have that sort of size. But then that's like another 1,000 parts, isn't it, that they have to print off. I like that.
You've got
the
little boilers in there as well.
Mm-hmm. That's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Right. Now I'm on the Lego site. I'm going to delete that, because I end up on the Lego site and then I end up spending money and I can't afford anything at the moment. So.
Oh, well. Yeah.
No, but
well,
there you
go. There is a Titanic sized episode for the Shonky Lab.
Yeah. Thank you very much. With like the 110th anniversary of it happening as well. So it's well timed. Yeah. It's really well timed. Shocking yeah. scenes.
Yes.
Yeah, cheers, man. Where can people find you on the internet? Because you do other stuff around there, don't you?
Yeah, but I do most of my stuff with you. So it's all over at Road 2 Media, which you're about to pimp anyway. So go do Road 2 Media stuff.
Okay. Well, head over to road2media.com. We got lots of shows over there. We got Shonky Lab and Grand Prix Podcast, which me and Andy do, Into the Expanse. Great Derelicts is over there as well.
Yep.
We have a Patreon that has kept our lights on and saved us from going under. Thank you very much for each and every one of you that is helping us out over there. It really is appreciated. And honestly, yes, without you guys, this wouldn't be here, because we made it through, I think, December and January by the skin of our teeth. It was almost like Indiana Jones sliding under the door as it's coming down, reaching out, grabbing the hat. Yes, we made it. But thank you to each and every one of you that's helped out over at Patreon. That is at patreon.com/road2media if you want to help out over there. I've just done a video, actually, of me editing an episode. I'm going to be putting it up there soon. So if you want to see that, go join up on Patreon and... let me know what you think. I think you saw that recently, didn't you?
Yes, I checked it out on Twitch. You were editing our Deck Chairs and Dirty Air episode.
Yeah, needed a drink. I forgot to make myself a drink. I'm such a dick.
Yeah.
Such an idiot. But and it went on for longer than what I expected. It went well over an hour as well. So I wasn't expecting that. I thought 20 minutes at the most. How am I going to pay out 20 minutes? But no, I made it well over an hour. So yeah, head over to Patreon for all that fun stuff. And also Black Dog Podcast, I'm on there as well. I forget what episode's out at the moment, but yeah, head over there, download all them episodes, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts and give us all a rating and review, and just share it around if you don't mind. That would be grand. We were going to be trying new live shows soon. It's just technology's been failing me and health has been failing me as well. So once I'm feeling much better for that, then we'll go and do more live shows. Let us know what you want us to do on them as well. That'll be good. I think that's it. So once again, thank you, Andy, for helping me out.
Anytime, sir. Always a pleasure.
Cool. And it just leaves me to say, please leave quietly. This is a residential area.
Don't ever let go, Jack. Don't let go.
What we need is you blowing a whistle.